Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Poetry with Flavor. This is your host, Miss Lucy. We've been absent for a few times, too many times. We apologize, but we're back, and we hope you enjoy the poetry this evening. Oh, before I begin, there are two websites that I websites on YouTube that I thought you might be interested in. One is a young black doctor named Dr. Bobby Price, and his health information, I think, is excellent and worth listening to, and he deals with health through a holistic approach, and he not only talks about, the rhetoric that we hear, cancer and all of that, and explains it in such with such clarity, but he also talks about foods, plant-based diets, which, you know, I never paid attention to before, but it's quite interesting and something that I'm going to pursue. His name is Dr. Bobby Price. The other website is called The Red Bucket. It's also on YouTube, The Red Bucket. And The Red Bucket refers to the big, like gallon-sized bucket you get in the grocery store of chitlins. And the reason I picked that one and investigated it was because of the poem that I had written, Ode to the Chitlins Mystique. Some of you may recall, I've never eaten chitlins. They've always turned me off. But I tell you, after looking at that website, it looks so good, I just might try them. It's called The Red Bucket. I forgot the chef's name. The chef, he's black. His name is, Ricardo Adams, Chef Ricardo Adams, and he's out of Alabama. And he does soul food, and you can... people come from all over. On the videos, you'll see people come from all over to get his food, but he also mails food out. Okay. All right. The poem I'm going to read right now is called All About Eve, and the story that unfolds in the Garden of Eden. Eve, girl, use a strumpet, a trifling, brazen hussy, narcissistic and selfish. You never met a river that you couldn't stare into for 20, 30 minutes or more. Looking at your own reflection, it's all about you, Eve. You don't care what anyone says or thinks. For crying out loud, you ignored the Lord God Almighty when he told Adam not to go near and not to touch and not to eat of that gorgeous fruit hanging from the tree of knowledge. And when Adam told you what the Lord commanded, you sassily said he was talking to you. He wasn't talking to me. You were so vain, you let that smooth talking fork-tongued devil in his shiny snakeskin suit mislead and deceive you. He had you strutting and sashaying around the garden like he was your pimp. He turned you inside out and upside down with his tongue, jutting in and out, licking his lips, spewing swagger, so intoxicating that you lost your cotton-picking mind and gave in to the temptation. Eve, girl, what were you thinking? You lived a perfect life with no cares, no worries or woes, living in the Garden of Eden on a million-dollar property with the Euphrates and Tigris and Nile rivers running through. All of your all of your needs were provided for. Every tree and every flower yielded sustenance for you, for your body, your shelter, shade, fragrance, and color. Hello? And did you not consider that you had no gas and electric bills and no mortgage to boot? Well, the deed is done. Now for the consequences. Now you feel shame, embarrassment, feel naked. Now you and Adam are running around like two chickens with their heads cut off, trying to cover yourselves with a fig leaf, trying to hide in the bushes behind the trees. But you can't hide from the Lord God Almighty. Your disobedience, ungratefulness has made him angry, brought his wrath. Wait, wait, here it comes. You are hereby evicted. That's right, evicted. You heard him. Get to stepping and don't look back. The gates of Eden have been locked. The flaming sword and cherubs stand guard. Paradise is lost. The consequences of Eve and Adam's defiant behavior dropped like a ton of bricks from a high-rise scaffolding. Stepping outside the gates of Eden, their bodies became full flesh. Their minds filled with fear. Gone were the lush trees, bountiful fruits, and beautiful flowers of Eden. There was not even a drop of water near to quench their first thirst. Before them was barren land, dust-filled, dry and rock-strewn. No fruit-bearing trees to quell the strange growling in their bellies. And now their skin stings from blowing sand and debris. Their feet feel the discomfort of the brutal and gravelly earth. The sky darkened as the stars of heaven were now hidden from their sight. What? An epiphany? Eve and Adam have a sudden understanding of what, when, why, and how they came to be in this place. Uh-oh, here we go. The falling out begins. Adam falls face down, crying out to the Lord, followed by Eve's wailing and screaming how sorry she is. Typical. When you get caught, you just say you didn't know. You didn't understand. The devil made you do it. The swollen sand settles. Their eyes focus forward. There in front of them, a neon vacancy sign pointing to the Cave of Treasures, Ghetto Gate Apartments. A dark cave under a huge boulder was definitely a step down from the luxury of the Garden of Eden and an affirmation of mankind's epic fall from grace was now in motion. Eve, girl, I coulda, woulda, shoulda told you that you never miss your water until the well runs dry. But I guess you know now. Hindsight is 2020, and Pandora's box can never be resealed. Congratulations. You have introduced sin and death to the world. Welcome, trials and tribulations, pain and suffering, wars and rumors of war, and oh, woe is me. They enter their new dwelling place, each feeling some type of way. Eve starts blaming the devil, and Adam starts blaming Eve, and the devil is nearby laughing and plotting his next move, because you know haters gonna hate. Eve just doesn't get it. and says it was just a small bite of the fruit. And from the clouds above can be heard, a sin is a sin is a sin. Now Adam must learn to labor, to turn the sand into soil, to provide for the family he and Eve will have. And Eve, she must endure the physical pain of childbirth, anguish of knowing she passes on their sin. The sorrow and stress of it all strains their relationship. Adam is never home, toiling from dusk to dawn. Eve struggles with morning sickness and evening sickness and a burgeoning girth and swollen ankles and a sore back and too many trips to the bathroom and an attitude that just plain sucks because of her constant state of physical discomfort. When Adam returns from the fields, he is too weary and too worn out to rub her back and rub her feet. And Eve, she ratchets up the nagging and complaining. The blame game starts again. And Adam covers his ears and closes his eyes, remembering the peace, quiet, and beautiful solitude he enjoyed in Eden's garden before Eve's arrival. Eve's first two births were boys. Cain was the first human born of man and woman. He was a farmer, the consequence of sin manifested in Cain. Turns out he was just like one of Bebe's kids. He was bad news with a big bad attitude. He could have benefited from some serious anger management classes. He was lazy in his work, mean-spirited, and disobedient to God. Abel, second born to Adam and Eve, was a cool dude, kind, compassionate, and obedient. He was a shepherd. Abel found favor with God, and this made Cain angry. And this made Cain angry, envious, and jealous of his brother, which led to a murderous heart. As he takes the life of his brother, Abel, feeling the fate of mankind's destruction for generations to come and into perpetuity until time is no more. Lord, help me bend these old knees so I can get back to praying. Excuse me, I have to clear my throat. Excuse me. Take a sip of this water. All right. I'm going to backtrack a little in the story and talk about Lucifer, so we can understand why Eve would do a 180-degree turnabout and decide to be disobedient to God and forfeit the luxurious and leisurely lifestyle she shared with Adam. While Eve lollygagged around Eden and Adam puffed up his chest while swinging in his hammock between the tree of knowledge and the tree of life, spying eyes were upon them. Just a stone's throw from Eve was Eden's newest visitor. Lucifer was his name, and there was no shame in his game. He was decked out in a Men's Warehouse Italian cut suit, accessorized with gold and diamonds, jade, emeralds, and topaz. He was blinged out, wearing more jewelry than 100 rappers combined. And good gugga mugga, let me tell you, he was fine fine, fine. He was beautiful in face and body and a shown-up pretty boy. And he was singing a crazy little song. Anything you can do, I can do better. And danged if he didn't sound like Barry White and Luther Vandross all rolled into one. This was too good to be true. Something had to be amiss. I heard through the grapevine that Lucifer was a fallen angel, and not just any angel. He was the most exalted of all God's creations. He was blessed with the gifts of wisdom, power, and perfect beauty. He was perfection until he got the big head and started thinking he was better than God. So full of himself, he boldly proclaimed, I will exalt myself above the throne of God. I will. I will. I will. I will, he said. Not once, but five times, and started singing, anything you can do, I can do better. Well, I guess you know how that ended. The Lord shot him to the earth like a bolt of lightning with a one-way ticket and gold star reservations for first seating in the lake of fire. Lucifer enters the Garden of Eden with an evil plan to exact revenge for being kicked out of heaven, a plan to wreak havoc on all the beauty the Lord created, filled his mind as he spied Adam and Eve. The moment Lucifer chose to tempt and deceive Eve, his name changed from Lucifer to Satan, from shining star to enemy, from angel to demon to devil. Okay. Hold on 1 second. I have this dry tickle in my throat. And I don't. Okay. this poem the title, which is Weren't Called. And my grandmother brought this poem to my mind when I was writing. Every time I went to visit my grandmother, and we'd go to church on Sunday, of course, but she would always tell me before we got to the church whether or not it was a good pastor, a faithful pastor, or a pastor who needed to talk with God. This is called Weren't Called. He watched as the pastor exited his shiny luxury car and was greeted and adorned like a movie star. His congregation responded like fans in a frenzy with hugs, kisses, thank yous, invitations, and gifts galore. He was mesmerized by the pastor's command of his flock emotion. From tears to joy to shouts to holy dancing that led to collection plates overflowing past 10%. That's when he got the notion. There's more fish in this ocean, and he'd only have to work one day a week. And so he began to pursue a degree from some godforsaken get-it-quick-and-cheap correspondence course that he found in the back of some magazine. Soon his flock came, but ever so slowly, to hear him deliver the word, but not caring what he said and daring only to think of the collection plate. He didn't notice the swiftness with which his flock had left. there on the front pew, eyes closed, head bowed, was a grandmother fervently praying. The new pastor came down from his lofty pulpit and asked what he had done wrong. The kindly grandmother replied, with sadness in her eyes, "It's about Jesus, not your smile. You just weren't called to it, my child." This is, I don't know why I have all these church poems in front of me. But anyway, this next poem is called Gospel Choir. They sing with golden throats that transform sorrow to joy, with purple wings of choir robes flapping and moving rhythmically, directed by the Holy Spirit. Wounds of overcome fill the pews as they sing Amazing Grace, and handkerchiefs and hands begin waving in the air. Softly they sing, "His grace, His grace, His grace," slowly building to a crescendo, and the congregation is standing and some dancing in the aisles. Their voices reach the rafters as the congregation joins in song. How sweet, how sweet, how sweet, my Lord, until it reaches heaven and God's ears, and God himself is moved to shout, "Lord, have mercy, my children sure can sing." Please excuse me. My throat is just dry. I don't know what's going on. Take another sip of water. Okay. Okay, let's see. You know, there is so much sorrow happening in today's world. And I personally am just so, I am distraught over the daily, and this daily with a capital D, daily shootings among young black men. And it just, I wish I had a magic wand, but it made me think I forgot the date now, was it 1995? Oh my goodness, I'm having a senior moment. I can't remember the date, and I know it like the back of my hand. But I'm talking about the Million Man March, and what a beautiful, beautiful event that was. All ages, all sizes, just from every avenue that you can think of, as far as careers or jobs or whatever. Just seeing that, I wish we could have that again. And I wrote this to Sterling Brown, who was a professor emeritus from Howard University. And I had a conversation with him. This is back in the 70s, that he was telling me he had read some of my work and he liked it, and he told me to listen and record. And, you know, listening to the black family listening to what's going on in our community. So, anyway, let me read this. They came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the hundreds, strong, united, committed, saying we are, we can, we will reclaim our wives, our sons and daughters, our families, our neighbors, our friends from the east, from the south, north and west, from the motherland of Africa and Canada and Caribbean, West Indies and all the rest, by foot, by car, by bus, by train, by plane, by like a caravan in the desert, spying the oasis ahead, which will quench the thirst, give hope and strength to master and change their destiny. They came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the thousands, Christians and Muslims, non-believers alike, Afros, naturals, dreads, soft sheen curls, fades, goatees, mustaches and beards, kufis, skies, caps, and other covered heads, old men, young men, tots, teens, young adults, and midlifers and seniors. They were strutting their stuff. They were blue collars and white collars and no collars at all. And walking tall, they were suited and booted, leather loafers and tennis shoes with kente cloth accents, competing with the rays of the sun as their presence shouted, the lynching stopped today, today, stop today. They came, Sterling, not by ones, not by twos, not by tens, but by the millions, the drums were sounded and their pulsating call was answered. The men stood tall as redwood trees. What a sight for my black soul, like the moon eclipsing the sun. It was midnight in the daylight. It was a black and beautiful sight. They came, Sterling. They came. They came amid threats of losing a day's pay, of reprimands on the job, of demotions and complete separation from employment, of being labeled militant, and even loss of life. They came anyway, big, black, and bad. They came and they conquered the fear and dispelled the myth of their powerlessness, seizing their rightful place on this earth. They came, Sterling, by the hundreds, by the thousands, by the millions, by the millions, by the millions. That's what I was going to say. But
well, you see it in the hearts and the actions of some of us.
Yes.
That's an experience I will never, ever forget. It is embedded in my subconsciousness. I didn't go. My sons went. And I was in Baltimore. I literally felt that spirit in Baltimore City from D.C. It was awesome. I can't really describe it. It was just... It was something.
It was a beautiful sight. It was a beautiful accomplishment. And, you know the history of it as well as I do, probably better than I do. The fact that it was such a powerful event that they downplayed it as much as they could. On the television, they downplayed it. They tried to downplay the numbers in attendance because it was over a million. It was over a million black men, and not one incident of disruption, of violence, of any of that. It was all unity. And that's what I hope to get to again.
Yeah, it was awesome. I met the visionary. The creator gave a vision to a Baptist preacher there in Evanston, Illinois. And he was part of a group down in Chicago where Farrakhan and Jesse Jackson and all of them would get together. And he shared it with them. And that's how Farrakhan got involved. And what I saw, the hand of the creator. The creator knew that the Christian couldn't pull it off, that it was going to take an organization, a group with an organization, a united organization. And that's how Farrakhan was selected.
You know, we need that again.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And you know,
it may not
what
be
I've
that
been...
that magnitude, but we need that again to save the lives of so many of these young black boys.
Because it's been almost a daily self destruction every day. You hear it
every day
in the news.
Every day. But I don't understand, if somebody can help me to understand this, how can a parent be sleeping or doing so, and your child 14 or 15 years of age, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, he's not home. I can't get that.
Yeah, I had a hard time with it until I realized how long we have been in this state, though. Functioning like this, because a lot of those mothers and fathers were teens when they had those kids. They didn't have the skills, you know. Go ahead.
I'm not saying, okay, I can understand you're young, and you know when you had them, and you don't see the need maybe to bring them up in a Christian environment. But what about this is your child and you want your child to be protected? I just don't see that in mother fight.
Having worked with children, young people, there in Baltimore City, on East Baltimore, you will find that a lot of the youth are the breadwinners of the home. But they know where their children are. Their children are out there hustling. They're out there selling drugs and everything else. And that came home to me one Sunday. An elderly gentleman, shot 3 young people because they was on his stoop, and he asked them to leave. And this lady called me and was talking about her son, who I think he was 15. He was from West Baltimore over in East Baltimore. And her whole thing was that her son was the best little kid, and she don't understand why he was doing what he was doing. But the oldest one was 18. Whenever I saw his rap sheet, because at that time I was worked director of Baltimore Child Development Community Policing Program, that young man's rap sheet was longer than the 18-year-old. But the mother was crying out that her son wouldn't. She don't know why her son was over there. He was over there doing drugs. That's why he was over there.
Yeah, but our community is so broken. Our fathers are in the home with the mothers, and usually, like you said, the young boys become men without knowing how to be a man.
Yeah.
You know, then mother becomes dependent on whatever money he brings in. And you're right, he probably knows it's illegal, but they need the money. That's why I wrote this a long time ago, and you all have heard it many times. black apocalypse.
Oh, yeah.
Children dying.
I like that.
Black brains frying off of dope put into veins. Men abandoning their seeds and streets turning bloodstained. Little girls get their menses before they can even spell their name and get caught with spotted panties because they don't understand why or what, and nobody has the time to explain. Daddy's gone and mama's too busy trying to make a dollar out of a dime. And so the children give birth to babies that become the next lost generation, growing like weeds, waiting, growing like weeds without direction, waiting to be Kimlawn to death. And that, you know, I wrote that over 25 years ago, and it's still going on.
Oh, yeah.
We got to find some kind of answer. We're destroying ourselves.
We sure
That's
are.
Right.
Okay.
I don't understand.
Let me see.
I'm going to say this. I'm not going to say anything else. Church people are the biggest hypocrites out. My church was in Baltimore City, 33rd and Frisbee Street. And it was a large church. The people lived out in the suburbs. They drove in on Sunday morning with their darn locks on their doors and their air conditioning up. They opened the door to the church, turned the alarm off, went in and did that thing, got back in their car, rolled the windows up, put the air conditioner heat on, drove past the community where they grew up. They grew up in those communities. But they have no connection to the community anymore. They're in the suburbs
now. And they don't want it. And they don't want
That's
the connection.
That's right. I call it the drive-in church.
Yeah. And I don't understand us as a people, the first thing we do is run from it. The first opportunity we get to move, we move from it. We don't do So how are we going to correct it if we run away from it? You know, it just festers.
I don't understand.
I know it hurts. I know the powers that be that don't want us to survive are just sitting back and watching us do the damage, you know.
Well, think about it. I grew up in the South. What do we say? If we could just get to New York, we didn't say in heaven, but if we just get to New York, we abandoned what was ours. They come back home, the property has been taken, nobody paid a tax on it, and they don't have anywhere to stay. They got to go to some hotel. Whenever they have the property, New York, they got to New York, and I know for a fact that there was people living in conditions there in New Jersey, in North Jersey, that home, a house that they were in here in North Carolina was 1,000% better. They didn't have doors. They had sheets to separate the living sleeping area when they were in that basement there. But they were in the north.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Uh-huh. We were bamboozled. I don't know how our thinking is so screwed up. Because everything that we gave up is what we want right now.
That's right. What they taking over.
Yeah. And I don't know because I haven't been keeping up with it, but I when I get an opportunity, I would like to read some more and find out what's happening in Harlem. That's being taken over. Or I should have
Thanks
been.
Bill.
I don't know.
Thanks for Bill Clinton.
Oh.
he made his office in Harlem. That wasn't no coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah. We have, what, you know what I think our major issue is the self-hate that we have just embraced as a group of people. The self-hate. And then with the self-hate, then we hate each other, you know. We're the only group of people like that. We're the only group of people like that. You know what is going on right now? Well, I think it's I don't want to say conspiracy theory. Well, I don't know what you call it. Is this thing that they've got going on and is advertised every which way and TV shows and everything else is this disconnect between black men and black women. And I believe it to be a manufactured thing, but we jumped right on it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, now this really bugs me. What's that guy's name? That black actor that just got convicted. Jonathan Majors. He actually said to his white girlfriend, why couldn't she be more like Coretta Scott King?
Right. I heard that advice.
Oh my God. And I was just, and Michelle Obama.
Right.
That's what he said. I'd like to punch him in the nose for that.
That's what I'm getting ready to say. I want to ask him, are you crazy?
Yeah, and now look where he is. The millions that he thought he was going to be living on have just disappeared.
Fine.
He has been canceled from every contract he's had. You know, he was supposed to be the lead star in the new Marvel Comics movie, and they canceled him from that. And whatever else he had, he's just canceled. And I'm saying to myself, you big dummy. The self-hate that we have, but yet we go outside of our community begging people to like us.
Right. I have no
when we don't like ourselves.
Right, I have no sympathy for him. None.
No, I don't either.
None
but
whatsoever.
None, exactly. None whatsoever.
Right. None.
And, I'm trying to find. Keep talking. I want to find this one poem that halfway addresses.
I have no sympathy for him. Right. None whatsoever. What did he think? Look at his actions. I mean, you need to.
Did your phone cut off?
No, it didn't cut off. I had to reach this other pile of papers.
No, not you. The lady that was making a comment.
Oh yeah, I'm still on here, Mr. Willie. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I just said I have no sympathy for him. I don't.
Well,
I don't.
I concur partially, and historically, I'm of a position now is that this stuff has been ingrained in us from slavery.
Yes. Yes.
And it's like a part of our DNA.
We need to get rid of it. I found it. I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to get off 1 minute, but I'm coming back on.
All right.
Okay.
I got a call. I got the case.
Okay. This is the this very short. And this referring to the Jonathan Majors. He's not the only one. What's that? What's that big NBA guy, Duque something or whatever, he was the first black to get this high coaching position or whatever. Do you know what I'm talking about? His first name is on
the
duty.
My son just walked out the door. How could I ask him?
And he lost his position because he was having an affair with the white wife of the coach, of the owner of the team. Yeah. And so he lost everything. So this is to them, to Jonathan Majors and whatever his name is on Duke. It's called Get the Message. Goldilocks got the three bears hunted. Little Red Riding Hood had the wolf hanged. Fay Wray caused the death of King Kong. And Emmett Till till so young in his grave. Do you get the message?
That's awesome.
I tell you, we won't learn. And the thing about that that guy, Jonathan Majors, he's now all, what do they call it, booed up with I can't remember names, of the black actress. Oh, my God, what is her name? He now has a black girlfriend, is what I'm saying, the one who's been going to court with him and everything, you know. Our thinking is just so messed up. And I don't know how we turn it around. I really don't. And I really wish I knew how to turn it around. Okay, let me see. Mr. Willie.
Yeah. I'm here.
Do you eat chitlins?
No, I don't eat chitlins. I dropped the C and put an S. I'm a frustrated biology major, and I know what goes what went into those.
Yeah. Well, you know, earlier, before I begin, I talked about this doctor who has a great website, great YouTube videos. He's got 481,000 followers. He's got 300 and some videos on the YouTube, and he's very, I just like him. I like the information. It's clear, it's concise, it gives you alternatives and all that. Well, one of the things he talked about was, like, I like salmon, and I make salmon cakes because they're easy to make, you know, because I do a lot of cooking. And he said most of that salmon that we're eating, that we're getting from the store, is genetically made. Is that the term?
It's farm-raised.
He said whatever they did to it, and then they put it in the water where the real fish are for it to get whatever from it. I don't know. Anyway, it freaked me out so bad, and I said, "Oh my God, I just bought myself 6 cans of salmon," and I'm going. I don't know what to do now. That's a good YouTube channel to watch. Dr. Bobby Price, young guy. Well, he looks young, like he's in his 30s or whatever. Very bright young man. But valuable information he gives. Okay, let me find that. Okay. Banana bread. I'll do this. This particular poem was selected by, I don't know who was on the committee or whatnot, but it was selected for publication in the Zora Neale Hurston magazine. And it's called Banana Bread. And this is one of my, I think when I was recognizing that things were changing for me, as I was getting older, but I respect spotted bananas and green peppers, bruised peaches and pears. I no longer gag when I see wilted lettuce, touch soft cucumbers or squishy tomatoes. I won't throw them out anymore. Now I make banana bread and take time to look for the good parts that are left. Then I smile and savor their flavors made rich by age. I no longer step on fragile leaves, changing from lush to limp to dust. I won't rape them with a rake. I admire their multicolors that make me take notice of life. I'm in awe that in winter's shadow, they continue to give pleasure and to make memories to let me know there is purpose and beauty even in the end of things.
Mm. Oh, that's beautiful, Lucy.
But you know that what I have said? Oh, well, thank you. But as I was reading that, just the other day, I said I felt like a piece of fruit sitting on the counter and getting soft and squishy. But anyway, how much time do we have left? Let's see.
You got about 4 minutes.
I was going to tell you. Can you
hear
me?
4 minutes, okay. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, Odessa's has a brother that's seriously ill, so she's been flying back and forth from Virginia to see him.
Yeah.
And she has some medical concerns herself, so if you know, haven't heard from her, it's...
Yeah, yeah. I actually talked to her earlier today.
Oh, good. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, it's, you know, I think we're all, not we all, but those of us in this age bracket, these are the things we have to unfortunately deal with, you know, and you just have to keep prayed up and
that's
pray
right.
for each other
mm-hmm.
and help
mm-hmm.
out where you can.
Right.
You know, because it's just, it's part of life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Let me see.
Yeah. Now, what you said is so true. That's why I said we need to take this attitude about these kids. You know,
yeah.
if you could just reach one.
Mm-hmm.
Right. If everybody mm-hmm. could reach one, look how many. Mm-hmm. I noticed how you said not twos, not threes, but thousands. If everybody would make an
yeah.
effort to reach one,
yeah, yeah.
look how many
and
would
not,
be touched.
Oh yeah, and you, oh my goodness, there's just so much that we need to correct and redirect and rebuild
right.
in our community. You don't know where to start, but we need
right.
to start. Is what I'm saying.
That's right. We need to start someplace.
Yeah, yeah. And there are a lot of organizations that are out there, but they don't get the they don't get the media attention, you know. That would
well, you
bring
know what?
Others
I've
in.
Come
but,
to the conclusion that we're gonna have to start. We're gonna have to do. We cannot wait for an organization.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
You cannot. Everybody knows you can find at least one child, one black boy, that you
yeah.
can just encourage and write. Everybody
exactly.
knows one that you
exactly.
can send for one. Right?
That's right. That's right.
Now, don't forget the black girls in Baltimore.
Oh, yes, yeah. But
the
I just
police
really
officers.
Said, yeah. Yeah.
The police
child.
Officers would rather deal with a yeah child. Police
right.
officers rather deal with the black male than the black female.
That's right.
Just how mm-hmm. off the chain the black girls are.
That's right.
Say that, again, Billy. Why is that?
Why? I don't really know, but they are worse.
Because
when
they don't have enough female officers.
I don't think that's the case.
I think it's because of the attitude that those young ladies have.
Oh yeah.
And that is they're more violent than
they
the
sure
boys.
Are. You know, yeah. I've always said when I was in the system, I would take a nasty boy anyway to a nasty girl.
Girl, yeah.
You get yourself a nasty girl, you got somebody that will fight you to the end.
I was a librarian for 5 years at MCIW in Jessup, Maryland, the Maryland Correctional Institution for Women. And when I came there, I was recruited because I had already retired from Baltimore City Public Schools. And let me tell you, I couldn't understand. The library was nice. I mean, I was so naive about what was going on in a prison, you know. But when we had the librarians meeting, and that meant the librarians from all the 6 men's prisons and the 1 women's prison, we had a meeting. And when they introduced me, because I was brand new, people laughed, and I couldn't understand why. You know, I'm new on the scene, and that's because the women were hell. They were that bad. Nobody wanted that position, and they had been rotating the librarians from the other prison would rotate to go over to keep the women's prison library open for a day a week, you know. And then I got hired full time for there. But when I had to substitute over at the men's prison, I was very comfortable over there with the men. You know, the men were respectful. It was just like day and night. But the women, they were fussing, they're cussing, they're fighting, the whole 9 yards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That was an experience worth.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
All right. You probably need to wrap it up. You probably got about one. Yep.
1 minute.
You got about 1 minute. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to mention those two. I keep saying websites. But this was on YouTube, and I guess you can find anything on YouTube like you do on the internet. But Dr. Mm-hmm. Bobby Price, I think, is worth your checking him out. And the other one, just for fun, the Red Bucket, which is the Shidlin. the chef's name is Chef Ricardo Adams. He's out of Alabama, and he does soul food on the barbecue, you know. He does the chitlins, the oxtails, and he also does the ribs.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, but that food looks so good, but I don't know if I can ever put a chitlin in my mouth.
What's that little thing?
Well,
you may like it. Tried, you may like it.
Anyway, you all, I thank you for tuning in, and maybe next time I'll have my new microphone. Hey, Anna, I even got a new microphone and computer.
Oh, my goodness, you on the ball. And I didn't get a chance to tell you because I had to get off and come back on. All About Eve, I like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to call
like
you
that.
after the program about that one. I want a copy of it.
Yeah,
I think you
nice.
Can make
that's
a plaque
nice.
Or something.
Yeah,
some way to
nice.
Market that.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's good. That's nice. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thank you all for tuning in, and I wish everybody good health and blessings from above. We'll leave it with that.
All righty. Okay, love you.
All right.
Have a good night.
Love you too. Thank you.
Okay,
all right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.